Good morning and welcome to Brass Stack Sunday for the 13th day of September 2020. My name is Corey Lane. I'm your moderator. I'm in the chair until quarter after one, backed by producer Dennis Johnson. Before I start, let me send special greetings, birthday greetings to Jerusha Small, one of the great lieutenants, and Claudette Haywood, and all who would have reached out over the last few weeks. But it's time to get down to brass stats. And today's brass stats, as we would have promoted here, and in case you missed it, we are looking at the Barbados economy and society and how it is projected to look over the next few years. Now, the reason for this show, I want to give the rationale. Many people, many group chats I'm in, etc., have been asking me, as though I'm an economist, what is happening in Barbados right now with the economy. Particularly of interest to many people is that things look so normal. That's what they're saying. We've lost lots of revenue. The tourism is all but gone. All these different things. They say slighter things happen in the Caribbean and in Barbados, and we saw major changes in fuel pricing and et cetera, et cetera. But no, they say this is, seems like a major event, but when they look at their daily lives, yes, some people are employed and finding it harder, but for the most part, when you look across the length and breadth of Barbados, things are looking the same. Some of them are suspicious that a lot of the pain and hurt and despair may hit us suddenly, all as a country. So they want to get an idea of what is really happening with the Barbados economy in particular right now, and how will it look in the near future. To help me to do this, I have two special guests this morning who will take us through these and other questions. So if you have your questions, you know you can give us a call at 434-1790, or you can send your short WhatsApp to 266-4862. But let me give you an update on our guest this morning. We have Dr. Kevin Greenidge. He's a senior advisor to the government of Barbados on leave from the International Monetary Fund, better known as the IMF. Where he was the senior economist since 2011. Prior to that, he was the director of research and economic analysis department at the Central Bank of Barbados, where he spent 17 years. So we have him on the line, and he has a good understanding of the Barbados economy and also government's plans and strategies moving forward. Now, we also have Dr. Justin Ram. He's a senior economist with over 25 years of practical and advisory research and management experience. His economic specializations include resilience economics, something we're going to have to really drill into, and finance, vulnerability indices, environmental and natural resource economics, climate change economics, development economics, macroeconomics, fiscal and debt analysis, financial sector economics, energy economics, transport economics, implementation and social and labor market economics. I say that to say that he has a broad understanding of all things economic. He was previously the director of economics department at the Caribbean Development Bank and a member of the bank's management team. He was responsible for the overall strategic direction and management of the economic department, with responsibility for, among other things, policy assessments, economic research, economic reporting and forecasting, policy-based lending, and country strategies. He was responsible for initiating the bank's work on delivery and implementation and successfully established a delivery unit in St. Lucia. Before joining the Caribbean Development Bank, Justin's experience include senior global economist with Worley Parsons, supervisory economist with the Mayor of London and the Greater London Authority, technical director with Jacobs Engineering, and an economist with the UK government's Department of Transport. He's also a teacher at the London School of Economics and Political Science and was a lecturer in economics at the University of West Indies, St. Augustine, Trinidad and Tobago campus. Justin also works as analysis an analyst with Thomson Reuters. He has worked with as a consultant with the Substantial Climate Change and Energy Projects in the Caribbean, Central Asia, Africa, and Europe. He worked on projects and programs over 32 countries across the globe. He's the co-founder of the Caribbean Blue Economy Conference and the Caribbean Leadership and Transformation Forum. He has a diploma in executive management from Stanford University and a PhD from the London School of Economics and Political Science. He holds a Master's of Economics from the University College of London and a Bachelor's in Economics from the University of West Indies with a post-grad certificate in Sustainable Environmental Management from the University of California, Berkeley. So broad base, again, two fantastic guests who are able and in a position to carry us through this program and answer all your questions and queries. My first question to the two guests when we come back is, where are we right now? But we know where we are. We are on Brass Tax Sunday. Compliments to Williams Industries Incorporated. For business surprise, big or small,
at Williams Metals, we have it all. Now is the time for you to fence your property with galvanized green, white, or brown chain link fencing and our brown band galvanized pole pipe, which are the longest lasting. We will give you a free estimate too on all your fencing material. For building surprise, big or small, at Williams
Metals, we have it all. At Williams Metals, we have it all. Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
Good morning and welcome back. 7 minutes after 11 o'clock, let's get down to brass tacks. Good morning. Let's start with you, Dr. Kevin Greenidge, on the question of where are we right now in terms of the economic situation in Barbados? Okay, Kevin. Okay, until we get Dr. Greenidge on the line, let's see if we can... Okay, go ahead. Apologies for that slight technical issue. We are back on. Dr. Kevin Greenidge, can you hear me?
Yes, Corey, can hear you.
Excellent. So where are we right now? Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Corey, and good morning, listeners. Corey, so where are we right now? Corey, I think it would be fair to say that right now we are battling one of the worst economic shocks known to modern history. Not just us, but the rest of the world. Every country is doing it. And we are doing so on all fronts, this thing called COVID, the pandemic. And you would have heard the last report by the governor, the central bank. You've heard what the IMF recently assessed on Barbados said, in that it's going to hit, it's just like any other country, it's going to hit Barbados really hard. We are predicting, the governor said in his last report that the economy contracted by 27%. We expect the end of the year, we will still be in double digits, probably around 15 or so percent contraction. And the medium term, next year, depends on how soon the world will come back and tourism recover. And that's the reality of it. Now, you said in your opening, you made reference to the fact that persons are saying that, yes, this is a huge shock, but the main feeling that you hear that you expect. You have minor other shocks and they felt it more. And I like to keep things real simple, Corey. Imagine two persons, and they both get hit by a shock. You call it a serious virus that hit the system. It won't be much different to what we're talking about now. Imagine one was, quite healthy, prepared, have a healthy kind of body, we call it the economy, all his blood pressure was good, and he was fit, running off every morning and well. His cholesterol was in good shape. He's no diabetes, you know, what we call a healthy, good, clean slate. And then imagine another guy who let his body run to ruin. He wasn't prepared to handle the shock. You know, his blood pressure was in the roof, cholesterol going through the charts, diabetes all over. And you would imagine that the impact of that same shock to those persons would be quite different. In the first individual is more, let's say, healthy, have a healthier disposition, would be more able to ready the shot, and you probably won't notice it so much. You're probably moving around a bit more than the other. Mm-hmm. And that is perhaps the best way to put it, because prior to COVID, and this is factual, the data they will tell you, we have spent the last 2 years repairing the biobased economy and improving the, what we call, economic fundamentals. You know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. We will have brought the debt for 176% of GDP, being the third indebtedest country in the world, to a position where that's no longer the case. At the beginning of COVID, we were 116. Now that is important. I mean, because people like Samuel start talking statistics, they're talking lives, yeah? Mm-hmm. When your debt is 176, nobody then you no money. And if you got a bar, you got a bar like a loan shark at extravagant rates. You understand? Mm-hmm. In fact, before you restructure, you can be paying like 30% on a particular debt, for example. Now we're paying 2.5 on certain debt. And it means that we used to pay 67 cents on the dollar. Over every tax dollar the government collects, we used to pay 60 somebody cents in taxes, leaving 30 somebody cents to do all the work, which with all the best intentions, you realize much cannot be done. But your debt is too much. Now you spend 22 cents on the dollar, all your tax dollar on debt. The rest remains to do things. So that was one. Then you hit the fiscal in terms of you realize that, for example, before the program started, the BERT program, we were our arrears, the private sector, individuals, tax arrears, income tax, VAT, PIT, all the corporation tax, and even suppliers credits, people providing supplies to government, the arrears was $1.9 billion. Now, an indication that you are doing really right and fixing your finances is when you start running arrears and paying down your arrears. And we paid, and the arrears were paid down to the tune of just above $200 million. So that is 1.71 between a combination of write-offs, offsetting, etc. We paid on $1.7 billion in reserve in arrears, which put money in the economy that people can now do things they couldn't do before. If it was a fella that had a construction firm and the government owe you $5 million and you now get that, what are you going to do? You got cash flow, you can go and invest, you can start another project, you can do things, you understand? Mm-hmm. So you fix the debt, you fix the arrears. You fix the fiscal now instead of running deficits, which calls you debt. You know it, Corey. If your income is less than your expenditure, you have to incur debt to survive. Agree?
Agree.
You got to go and borrow with somebody, unless you got a nice grandfather, grandmother, or buddy that can lend you money.
A godfather.
Other than that, it's debt. Godfather.
Let me interject here. Dr. Green, let me interject here and tell you why. Now, it was claimed that the and I'm talking economics here, you know, we have a lot of political followers that follow this program. So they put everything in the context of politics and party and so on. But I want to talk economics here for a moment. It was claimed that the Barbados economy was really bad. It was on the precipice. It was on the edge of the cliff, ready to fall over. And we would have had a number of economic plans in the past, and particularly the last 5 years until you guys started your 2 years. Now, are you telling me that in those 2 years, we were able to get that fit, that well, that prepared to be able to weather this COVID storm in such a short space of time? Some people are going to be skeptical because these guys are saying, okay, they can get it done in 5-10 years, and you guys got it done in 2.
Right, Corey. Corey, put it this way. If you go to the doctor and tell you blood pressure is 130/8, you be skeptical? The numbers speak for themselves. Prior to the program, I don't get any politics, my man. I just tell you facts.
Facts.
One. Yeah. Prior to the program, the debt was 178%.
Whoa.
76% is now 111. It's going to rise because the government has to spend money on COVID-related expenditures to help us weather this. And it will continue to spend money in order to help us get through and recover. Prior to the fact, number two, the reserves of $420 million. It's now $2.1 billion, 30 weeks of import cover. which means if you don't earn reserves in the next 6 or 8 months or what, because of tourism, you still have a pool you can pull from to survive. Fact number one. Number two. Fact number three, Corey, the arrears is $1.9 billion, not just a shy of $200 million. Eh? That, so that's third fact. Fact number four, deficits average 7% prior to the 2 years. Over 2 years, deficit average 3%. And now, because of COVID, of course, you got to relax a bit more. But these are the facts are there. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not precising any plan, one versus the next. Mm-hmm. But I know what happened is that prior to the design of this program, the BERT program wasn't conceived by anybody outside Barbados. It was conceived by the best minds, bring the best minds of Barbados together in an overall economic team where we put together something that we know could have worked, right? So I don't know, I'm not going to criticize any other plan prior to that, but I can tell you this medicine worked.
If everything you're saying is
put
true.
Us in a position, Corey. Mm-hmm. It put us in a position, Corey, that when COVID hit us, it hit everybody. You mentioned the other countries in the world. You keep people, the government were able to divert resources into responding to the COVID. I can list a number of them, everybody aware of them. So that you find the way other countries handle it because of, especially in Region 2, they didn't have the same debt dynamics. They didn't have the same fiscal position that we had, and therefore the effects were different. So those are the facts, where you can't really argue facts. Numbers are numbers. All you choose and interpret is up to you.
Correct. All right, let me go over to Dr. Justin Ram at this point. Thank you very much, Kevin. And if everything you're saying is true, you guys really need to be commended. We're going to dive deeper into that. But I want to get Dr. Justin Ram take on where we are right now in relation to all the different things we would have spoken about just now. So I want to say good morning and welcome to you, Dr. Justin Ram. And I want to get your take on your opinion on where are we right now.
All right. Hi, good morning. Good morning, Corey, and good morning, Kevin, and a special good morning to listeners. Thanks very much for having me on this morning. I want to agree with a lot of what Kevin had to say in terms of what the government's BERT program has managed to achieve. Now, I would probably say that the BERT program thus far has managed to achieve some amount of fiscal stability, which was a big concern before the BERT program was implemented. And that, of course, has also meant that the government has managed to stabilize the foreign exchange reserves, particularly with a lot of support from the multilateral financial institutions like the IMF, the IDB, and the CDB. So luckily, I would say that before COVID came in to have a negative impact on the Barbados economy, the government had put in some really strong measures so that Barbados certainly is not as vulnerable as it could have been before those measures were put in place. Now, where I am sitting, the economy has to go through and still has to go through a significant rebuilding exercise. This was going to happen with or without COVID. What do I mean by that? One of the real challenges we have across the Caribbean, and certainly Barbados is no exception to that, is that we have been having fairly low growth rates amongst our gross domestic product. That, I think, is something that really needs a lot of focus now. So while I'm saying that the government has done a great job in stabilizing the fiscal as well as the external accounts, now is the time for us to really hone in on how we can bring back growth to this. And it's going to be quite difficult because before COVID, we weren't having the type of growth rates that are required to get us into a place whereby we can say, all right, we're onto a sustainable and a resilient future. Now, what I want to say to your listeners is that the government is going to have to implement a number of reforms to really try to kickstart private sector investment. Now, while initially coming out of this COVID-19 period, the government is probably going to have to spend a bit more, and that is what they have been doing, certainly with respect to the BOSS program, where they have been, I guess, shifting expenditure away from wages and salaries towards capital investment, which is really good, and I think the works are there for everyone to see. But that's going to just be, I think, for the short term. what we really need to get now is more private sector investment growing. We have to look at how we can improve the business environment so that now not only domestic investors, but also private investors can start to look at Barbados and say, okay, hey, that looks like a really good place for me to invest my money and start to get things going. Now, why your listeners might be saying that they're not really feeling the impact of the COVID-19, well, that's because the government has been providing significant support to the economy. If you look at the numbers, there's been a significant rise in the number of people claiming unemployment benefits. Government has managed to keep those people, giving those people some income. But that can't go on forever. And I think the government has to be commended for doing that, but now has to be planning for the next phase of this. How do we now get these people back onto sustainable employment? Now, just to say, as you look at the recovery that's likely to happen from here, this is going to take us some time. So I think listeners have to understand that they need to be patient. It's going to take us some time to get back to where we were. But ultimately, we don't even want to get back to where we were. We want to get back to a place where the economy is growing at a much faster pace than it was before. And so I think everyone now has a responsibility to put their shoulders to the wheels to get this economy going again. And not only going again, to go at a pace that was faster than where we were before.
All right, I want to drill down on about three things you said. I have one other question for Kevin, and then we go to the lines. All right, both you and Kevin mentioned that it is going to hit hard later. The economy is going to have to go through some serious changes and so on. In terms of outlook economics, in terms of projections, when do you project that they would start to see the hard hit or see the major adjustments and feel it in their everyday lives? Any projections there?
Is that for Kevin?
No, that's for you, Doctor.
For me? Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
When I get him, I'll ask him the same thing too.
Yeah. Well, one of the indicators that I'm looking at very carefully is that, as you know, the banks have been providing moratoriums to persons who have had loans, and that has certainly provided a cushion to many individuals during this time. Given that they don't have to pay their mortgages or they don't have to pay other loans, it has meant that they can concentrate their expenditure on their essentials, as it were, you know, the food and so forth. Now, one of the challenges we're going to have is that banks, of course, cannot continue to maintain these moratoriums forever. I mean, one of the good things with the new rules and accounting is that moratoriums don't count against them with respect to bad debt. So that's good. But at the same time, we don't want a situation whereby our financial institutions are now going into stress, because that then goes into a whole range of other challenges that we don't want to start to have to deal with. So one of the things that we're going to see is maybe over the next few months coming into the next year, as some of these moratoriums are unwound, then I think we're starting to go to see some of the real effects of this. If people can afford to continue to pay their loans while at the same time taking care of their essential expenditures. Now, as it relates to the outlook, I just want to go back to history a bit. When in 2001 we had the September 11th attacks, it took a fairly long time, I would say maybe about 40 months, for these economies to get back to where they were before. Now, when we had the financial crisis in 2007 and 2008, it took maybe about 55 months. Now, for September the 11th attacks, there was something called fear. People were fearful of traveling for obvious reasons. With respect to the financial crisis towards the end of the last decade, people had damaged balance sheets because they didn't have money. They had lost. Their house prices were falling. With this particular challenge that we're going through now in COVID-19, Corey, we have both of those things occurring. People are fearful of travel for obvious reasons, and we have damaged balance sheets. So with respect to that, I can say to your listeners, we can probably expect a slow recovery. What we have to hope for is that either we have the vaccines becoming available fairly soon, or if not, we have treatments that can help people recover quickly from the COVID-19. I think we're going into a period here as the Northern Hemisphere starts to go into autumn and to winter for us to really see, okay, what's likely to happen here? Are we going to see a spike in cases with respect to our main source markets for tourists? And let's see how that pans out. I think we're in a period where we are looking to observe as to what is likely to happen. But just to come back to the point, I think we're going to have a long recovery here. I like to call that a Nike swoosh-shaped type of recovery rather than a U or a V-shaped recovery.
Mm-hmm. All right, excellent. I just want to let you two daughters know I've moved from confused to a bit scared. I don't want to develop panic out of the show, but I just want to give people a true sense of what's going on instead of living in a sense of a false sense of comfort. And because I think you hit the nail on the head when you mentioned the fact that, yes, government has been in a protective gear almost in terms of the unemployment, even with the banks, some landlords, some employers who would have, you know, made sure they maintain staff levels, pay a little 3 day, 2 day, a week type of thing going on. But it, as you said, it cannot continue forever. And I think that if people don't start to look at what the next phase or second gear looks like, that they may not put their house in order to suit. And now coming out of the show, I want people to be educated and to be put in a position where they can make decisions based on proper projections. I want to touch on something you said also in terms of kind of moving a focus from a current to capital investment base and asking the private sector to really get involved in terms of the investment. I think the confidence is there in terms of looking what's happening, the outlook. Projections from like the rating agencies looked a little better. I don't know what they look like now. Communication has improved. The ease of doing business is something we're still concerned about, but we can give praise where praise is due with the whole idea looking at the certificate of character, the online ability to renew your license and so on. All of these playing to the ease of doing business. I really want you to be more specific when you mentioned or putting the shoulder to the plow. What does that look like in real terms beyond the phrase? When you said that we all need to put our shoulder to the plow, what exactly are you expecting, or what exactly would be ideal in situations like that? And that is for you, Dr. Ram, and then we go to Dr. Kevin Greenidge.
Thanks, Corey. Well, what I mean there is that while people have a bit of downtime here, I think it's really important that people start thinking about the next phase, about what is the economy likely to look like after this pandemic. There are going to be some real structural changes that we need to be aware of. Is it that people are going to go back, all of the persons who might have been laid off from the tourism industry, are all of those people going to get back into work? Are we going to see a significant uptick in construction activity? Are we going to see a significant uptick in manufacturing? Now, what I think people must do now is to take the opportunity, and I think the government must be commended for giving people access to online educational services, is to see how they can now improve on their own human capacity, human capabilities in terms of taking advantage of any education and making sure that they are ready for the new type of economy that's coming our way. Now, the government is doing its part in terms of trying to improve the efficiency by which they are going to administer many of their services. Must also be commended by this whole initiative to digitalize the access of government services online. I think many people need to take advantage of these things when they become aware, become active to realize that, wait a minute, I can now do a lot of things with a lot more efficiency. And so that means that I'm going to have a lot more time to do things in a productive way. Now, I want your listeners to think about there are many opportunities coming out of this pandemic. The governments, not only in Barbados, but also in across the Caribbean, are speaking about the need for us to become food secure. That means that I would say to many persons, consider other avenues that you can consider going into when this pandemic starts to subside, to see how I can now earn an income different from what I was doing previously. That is what I mean by everyone now saying, okay, I have skin in the game. I have to put my shoulder to the wheel and see how I can also now improve myself, think about the opportunities of the future as to how I can now help my country rebuild. You know, it sort of just comes back to that famous saying from John F. Kennedy, where he was saying to the Americans then, ask not what your country can do for you, but really what you can do for your country. I think that is becoming the time. And the government now has a responsibility to lay the foundation so that any individual who wants to do what they can do for their country can do that in as easy a way as possible. And that's where the doing business environment really comes in. But not only doing business environment, Corey, it's about how people get access to finance. It's not only banking finance that people need to have access to. We need to ensure that venture capitalists and angel investors can also come in and play a role. These are some of the major interventions I think the government needs to look at, because we really would want to see a lot more entrepreneurial activity. And just one final thing here, Corey. The COVID-19 has shown us that you can be sitting anywhere in this world and providing a service to anyone, anywhere in this world. So Barbadians can say, okay, I have now gained some new skills. I can use the platform of Zoom or whatever have you and provide a service to someone in South Korea or even Japan. I think now is the time to realize that the world is our oyster and the market out there is the world, not only Barbados, and start thinking in that way. And so that, but the government also has to do its part and ensure that people can take advantage of all of these opportunities that are out there now.
All right, thank you. Dr. Kevin Greenidge, a few things. One is, do you share the same projections as Justin in relation to when we'll start to feel the different hits? What are some of the second gear or next phase plans that you anticipate in relation to the post-unemployment benefit type Barbados? And actually, I'll just leave those two. So I don't want to get it too complicated. I'll leave those two for you. Projections and second gear.
Thanks, Corey. I don't necessarily hold the view that you're gonna feel it harder than you're feeling it now. It all usually have to do with how government responds. I don't want to be pushing panic button. Now, in the this what you call the baseline. What do you think will happen in the baseline projection? The central bank, the government, well, the IMF, the central bank, et cetera, is projecting we will recover, government start recover in 2021. Of course, that is predicated on how soon tourism come back. But of course, things are getting worse. More persons are being laid off. You're finding much more claims on NAS, et cetera. But then government is responding. At the beginning, persons thought it would be sore. The pain will be so much, but then government respond with various programs to try to mitigate the effects. And government is not static in policies. Now we have to think about how do we continue, because tourism is not back yet, how do we continue to keep persons, households in earning some sort of money? How do we keep persons who have lost jobs to be still viable? So government have to respond, and indeed government is thinking about ways to respond. You know, because the unemployment numbers are rising, and if you leave it and you don't respond, then you will talk about the feel and the great pain that you expect will happen if persons go home and they don't have any money, or maybe if they have to live on their 60% of their regular salary, you will feel it. But government is, and I think over the last 2 weeks, government has been engaging in private sector in ways that it can do this, ways in which you can keep persons employed, even if it's through some kind of training program, if it is true. Having them come back to work and engage in different activities, government is responding. So I don't necessarily buy the notion that you're going to feel it worse than you feel it today. What I agree with Justin is that government will have, if you don't respond, then you will find it that way. But I can tell you, government is looking for policies. And I believe you'll hear some stuff of that coming in days to come very soon. Now, in terms of what I agree with Justin, in terms of some of the things we have to do, one, we have to take care of each other. For example, the we say a moratorium. Many countries have made declaration. I'm not saying that's where we'll go, but have stated literally that this a moratorium. We government, they're extending moratoriums on loans and et cetera to the end of December, even beyond. And you find some institutions that complain. I mean, we all got to take care of each other. In good times, some financial institutions make some hefty profits. So if they have to hold strain and help, as it now, that will be necessary. We have to find measures to keep persons back in the job. I mentioned that before, and that's something government is looking at. We have to ensure that when the tourism tourists will return next year, or whatever year, period next year to come, I believe next year, that the hotels product are fast, and the hotel, you know, the rooms and the quality of the product remains a good quality that can accommodate that return tourism, which means perhaps we need to look at a program which allows to invest in some of the hotels. Allow the hotels to invest in their products and build their, because if a hotel closed and the rooms are locked down, you know that anything, you ain't using it, it's going to deteriorate. So these sort of programs, things you not to start thinking about preparing ourselves for return. You see that government would have put a lot of emphasis, and we talk about that, as you remember, even from our discussion about BOSS, prioritizing capital works program. Work capital program that don't necessarily depend on tourism, like fixing the roads in Scotland District and different parts of Barbados, a roads program, and we'll don't that a capitalist program, which means fixing government buildings, painting schools and different things. So you have to look for ways to build on the capital, because capital expansions will only get you that kind of returns when the economy open back up, but at the same time it mitigates the effect. So in a nutshell, yes, I think we're going to be in this for a little while, the COVID, we are until you find a vaccine, we're going to be here for a little while, but it doesn't mean that we're going to have suffering. I am not a preacher of suffering.
Right. Let me interject on one point. I do believe all the initiatives you all have mentioned so far sound economically. That's one. Two, I believe government should be ambitious and is good. But one thing I, as a layman, take a little confusion with, or a fine contradiction with to some extent, is that 9/11 was a singular event. You had the worst economic the recession for a while with the 2007-08 recession. And the first one, 9/11, was, according to Justin, about 14 months. The other one was 55 months. So now we have the worst ever through this COVID thing. How then could the projection be 12 months? You're saying 2021. How do you reconcile that?
Again, Corey, in my view, it has to do with the policy response of a government. Mm-hmm. You talked about 9/11, right? I was at Central Bank in 9/11. Mm-hmm. And it took just over a year. We only have 1 year of negative growth in 9/11. And then the economy recovered in the following year. Because the policies, they had some discounting in hotels at that time, prices, I don't know if you remember, where we're offering, come stay for 7 days, pay for five. There were creative ways that the country tried to deal with 9/11. You remember those things? Mm-hmm. Price discounting thing. Now, come to 2008. In 2008, we had a global recession. And it took about 2 to 3 years for the world to recover. It took about 8 to 9. It all have to do with how you respond to a policy.
But I agree with that. But remember, there's this thing called source markets and so on. Because you have places like the UK, you have the US. We still have to look at what is happening in those areas. 30 million unemployed in the US. Italy facing collapse because of tourism fallout. Brexit still clothed in uncertainty. So I think we still have to, we can have the best plans in the world. What about our source market?
So that's why I'm saying, because you prepared a bit, you can perhaps help some of the benefits you have gained in the 2 years, you can now have to spend. Mm-hmm. You now have to spend money keeping people safe from the effects of this COVID. You can't control when the world will open back for tourism, mm-hmm. but you can control a mother, a young man, a person going home with nothing in their pocket.
I like that.
If you got money in your pocket,
No, I say it like that because it's like building more dependency. Yes, you have to be interdependent, but what you're saying, as we reform the economy, we build in more dependency pillars. That's what I'm extracting things from that, what you're saying.
The heat shock. So you can, you don't know when U.S. going to come back, mm-hmm. tourism, but I can, if I have money, and they say we build the reserves back to a comfortable level, if I can instead of saying, my grandma went there and doing it, I could say, well, who is this hand bill? And come and do this here. You may not be what you like doing, but here, do this other thing. Or who is this hand bill and I can pay for you to do some training mm-hmm. because I got some buffering that I can afford to. You understand? Mm-hmm. Or instead of saying, let me wait for, I can't build a hotel. Maybe I can't build a hotel. No, I can't do something related to tourism. But maybe I can go and build some roads. And it's the same people who are the African debt employment in roads. And you measure earlier your program, Corey, mm-hmm. digitization. So you start mm-hmm. to look at things that you can do instead of throwing your hands in here and saying, well, Lord, tourism is coming back, so we'll be dead. Correct. It says, that, let me take care of each other. Mm-hmm. So you have to have a strong, continued, strong social protection program that was put in place in March. Remember, we redoubled the rates at the welfare department. We instituted $600 per person. You continue to take care of the most vulnerable people. You continue to make sure that those who really need help get the help. Then you look for ways in which you can keep workers earning something. Because a man, a woman, people don't like handouts, they want to earn something.
Correct.
So we have to put money for that. So instead of talking about my reserves going to grow by this, maybe it will fall. Maybe it will be 2.1 billion, we lose half billion. So what? That's why you built me first place.
All right. At this point,
you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I definitely got you. At this point, I want to bring in the public. It's 90 minutes before noon. I'll get a couple of WhatsApps and callers. We are coming to you. Get some WhatsApps. We'll take a break. We come back to the callers. This one says, good morning. I'm asking for my son back to school, and I'll let him talk to you. His name, I say, my name is Daniel Ward. I am 12 years old. My back to school wish for supplies, pencils, and stuff. So if anybody think they can send me a message, I'll put them in contact with Daniel. This one says, good day, Corey. Please ask your panelists to be as specific as possible as how can we not only mitigate the impact of COVID and reverse the slide in the economic activity, but rejuvenate the economy and take it to stellar heights. As what do we do as a country? And what do we need to do going forward to facilitate strong growth and make the country a powerhouse of activity? I like that one. They said, if the desired growth doesn't come in the time frame that is being estimated, is it possible that we will end up later in the future back in the similar debt situation where payments will become extremely difficult? I want you all to keep those in mind. This one says, the people with the high cholesterol and diabetes that Dr. G spoke about is the middle class and the working class. And the others with good health that doesn't feel the impact are like the big ups or the big salaries that is hurting the government purse. I'll leave that one there and I'll read this one last. Please ask the goodly gentleman that question again to give an answer in one sentence. Where are we now? And I can let you all take us to break with that. In one sentence, Dr. Ram and Dr. Greenidge, where are we now? Dr. Ram, you first. Where are we now? One sentence.
Hey, Corey. We're in a place where we have weathered the medical consequences of this pandemic. And now we're waiting to see what's happening in our source markets. But we have to be mindful, ensure that governments can still provide significant support to the economy now. But at the same time, it's time for us to re-engineer our economy towards greater private sector reliance.
All right, good. Start there. We don't want to be a paragraph. One sentence, Dr. Greenidge.
We are facing one of the greatest economic challenges ever known to modern man. And we are weathering it together. We are doing what is necessary to ensure that each and every single Barbadian and people residing at our borders survive. It ain't easy. We have prepared for this. And now is the time for that. And now we're in a position where we are going to be able to deliver on that. We're going to deliver. It ain't going to be easy. I ain't trying to tell them about it. It's not going to be easy. But we will make it.
Okay, Barbadians, it is 16 minutes before noon, and this is Brass Tack Sunday with the kind compliments of Williams Industries Incorporated. For building surprise, big or small, at Williams Metals, we have it all.
Angles, flats, cement and doors, lumber, windows, and much, much more. Get all your lumber needs from us. We have number one treated pine, all different types of plywood, V-joint, siding board, and concrete board. In addition, we have grade 3 2x4s and form ply for boxing. Big or small, at Williams Metals, we have it all. At Williams Metals, we have it all.
visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
You're listening to Brass Tacks Sunday. We're looking at the prognosis of the economy post-COVID with Dr. Justin Ram and Dr. Kevin Greenidge. We go to the telephone lines and say good morning and welcome to our first caller. You're on the air. No, that would be 411, but you're on Brass Tacks Sunday. How can we help?
Hello?
Hey, you're on the air.
Right, thank you.
We don't have the number for Howard, but we have Dr. Justin Ram and Dr. Kevin Greenidge.
Yes, a pleasant day to you guys. I enjoy the way you explain things. And one thing I must say that you surprised me most of all when the guys dealt with food in a way whereby we need to plant more and all next year. I asked myself over the years, why do government in Barbados don't ever let us know what money is being spent on agriculture in the DGP? I know for many years, Jamaica, I mean over 30 years ago, Jamaicans used to spend 5 cents in every dollar. It has hurt my heart when I see tons, I mean tons, of carrots coming into Barbados when we could grow them. Tons of onions coming into Barbados when we could grow them. And them is just a few of the things. I ask myself, why don't we plant more, whereby at the end of each year we could say, well, look, government spends 5% on the DGP, on agriculture, and it made a good return. We didn't have to import, let me say, $30 or $40 million in food stuff that could have been grown here. I like men like you with big brains come out and tell government they need to spend more money on food.
Let's get their take on that. Your main point is on agriculture, food in relation to the economy, right? And correct?
Correct.
Correct. Okay. Let's hear you, gentlemen. Dr. Greenidge, let's start with you on this one. What is your take on the role of agriculture in the economy?
Sorry?
What is your take on the role of agriculture in the economy?
I think it's very critical. I think if you listen to the various pronouncements by the Prime Minister and also by the Minister in the Ministry of Agriculture, agriculture plays perhaps the number one role, particularly in food security. And I don't have the details on my hand directly, but for example, I know more government lands are being placed into agriculture. More incentives are again being put in place for farmers and persons to get into agriculture, but not only that, to improve what they're doing in respect to agriculture. So I would say agriculture is one in number one pillar. One is significant pillars of the economic recovery program under the BERT program. I understand what the caller is saying. Perhaps we need to get a bit more information there to public in terms of pricing and things like that. So I take his point wholeheartedly. But I can tell you that if you just visit Ministry of Agriculture, call or anything, you will see the opportunities. Because this COVID has taught us, above most things, that countries need real possible to be self-sufficient, or at least try to be, and one of those main areas in terms of food. Imagine no flights come in. If we had to close the port and we can't do it, what are we going to survive? So this is a major part of the government program, agriculture. It's nothing that we to shake a finger at.
Good. Dr. Ram.